Hi, everybody. I'm John. I'm an alcoholic. It's nice to be home. First of all, I want to welcome the newcomers and our visitors. I want to thank the committee, Todd. I forgot your names. I'm sorry. Digby and Mark. And Digby, thank you for the really kind, beautiful words before the meeting. I'm so humbled to be here. That's how she starts. She starts down and then she makes her way up and then she's down again. I can't believe that I celebrated 25 years on April 5th of this year. Thank you. I honestly and truly can't believe that. You know, I can't believe that and it's a day at a time. There's so many people that are here that that knew me when I first came in. To have that kind of history and to have this kind of longevity and love, you know, it really is about that for me. I'm an alcoholic. I came from a long line of alcoholism. I grew up in New Jersey. Yeah. It took me about 5 years to have enough self-esteem to say that I was from New Jersey. It did. I'm from Newark. Newark. I'm from Newark. How you doing? Yeah, how you doing? And I grew up in a very crazy Italian alcoholic family. My dad was an alcoholic, died from this disease. My mom, you know, when I first got sober, I wrote my mother a letter and just thanking her for how strong she was. And it took me a while to really grasp the fact that my mother was a prescription addict. Although, you know, our kitchen cabinets were lined with prescription drugs, and I started taking those when I was young. You know, here, honey, here's a sleeping pill. You know, thanks, Mom. You know, and so it really kind of dawned on me that my mother was a prescription addict. My grandfather committed suicide. I'm one of four children. My brothers and sisters are all alcoholic, compulsive overeaters. Their kids. I mean, it's everyone in the family is an addiction and active addiction, and I'm the only one that's sober. So it's really been a journey with my family. I'm back in New York now and I'm around them. So it's all kind of up, you know, in my face again. And I was a young guy, you know, I was sexually abused as a kid and I was beaten. I don't know if you've ever read a book called Child Called It. It's that kind of, just a really extreme kind of physical abuse. My dad was a raging alcoholic. My mother was a raging prescription addict. And we were beaten. I was petrified as a kid, petrified. And I remember just, my sister and I grew up together. I have an older brother and sister. And my sister and I were always behind the door, you know, holding each other and just crying and just so afraid. I was so afraid. You know, my dad was, he would always, you know, after we'd beat the shit out of me, would say things like, be as good as you are. Like, what does that mean? You know, be as good as you are. My mother's like, you don't know when is when. That was all I ever heard is, you don't know when is when, and be as good as you are. And what I learned to do is I love words. And I love books, and I studied, and I read encyclopedias, and I read dictionaries, and I read milk cartons, and I it was an escape for me. I loved going to museums. I was a very precocious, gifted, you know, I'll claim that now. I was very gifted as a child, and but I was put down, and I was never able to really embrace that. You know, I had to prove myself. I was boy of the year, getting citizenship awards. I was president of my class. You know, I was salutatorian when I graduated. I wasn't valedictorian, and that kind of really messed with me because it was about perfection. It was about being perfect, and there was no one that was really judging me. It was something that I thought that I had to do, you know, for myself. And I just, You know, I remember my first drink. I mean, when we were kids, I don't even know if Asti Spumante is, I don't even know if that's, is that really even alcohol? I don't even know if it is or it isn't. It was New Year's. You know, my older sister would babysit for us, and her idea of babysitting for us was to get us drunk. So I was like, I had my first drunk when I was 8. And she took us to the park, and I was hanging out with all these older people, and like it was funny to watch us kind of like drink and fall and tumble. And then we got home, and we had this parrot. You know, it was this parrot that we'd walk in, and I was drunk, and everything was spinning and just going past the parrot. My brother wound up killing the parrot. I don't know what happened. My mom and dad went to Atlantic City to celebrate their anniversary, and it was like in the middle of winter, so my brother opened up the window and froze it to death. I mean, I know animal rights. I love animals. I do. But it was just like the parrot was gone, but he messed with my first real drunk, you know, and my first blackout came when I was about 13 years old. I had just graduated from 8th grade, and we were at a CYO dance. I went to Catholic school, and it was a Catholic youth organization dance, and I was with my cousin, who I was having sex with. This is Jersey now, so I didn't know that I was gay until I knew I was gay, you know, and I didn't know that I was alcoholic until I knew that I was alcoholic, but I was having sex with my cousin Joey, who still looks as good as he did then and now, you know, and I saw him a couple of months ago, and he kissed me on the lips, told me I was his favorite cousin, you know. check this out. He was drunk out of his mind, and he wanted me to spend the night, you know, and it was so funny, and like my Mary Jo, who's his wife, I've never ever said this from up here, and Mary Jo was his wife, and she would always get really catty with me. I'm like, girl, I was there long before you were, so don't even like, you know, don't even go there, you know. Anyway, so this went on for about 4 years, from like the 7 to 11, and it wasn't even, how good could it be, but I loved him. I was in love with him, and he was like captain of the football team, and we were camping, and we always went camping, and we always, Joey and I were always in a tent together, and then this last time, we were in some trailer, and her name was Dorothy, and he blew me off for Dorothy. That night, he's like, no, we can't do this anymore. So before I knew that I was a friend of Dorothy's, I hated her. Hated her. And anyway, so that was like my first love. I drank, and I, you know, something, I got sick. I was a blackout drinker. I was also a puker. And I got sick that first time that I got sick at that dance. You know, I woke up, and my dad actually punched me down a flight of stairs because I got drunk, and my father was a drunk. You know, he didn't say anything to me for about a week, and then I just came home, and that was kind of how I, you know, it wasn't enough to get me to stop drinking. You know, we started, it was high school, you know, we were, you know, let me just, I remember the night that I made the salutatorian speech. I don't know, I still to this day don't know how we got that alcohol, because we were at my friend Dickie's mom's house. And I remembered that I was drunk, and I had a mint green suit with like dark forest green lapels with a big bow tie that was bigger than my face back then. And I remembered I was just sitting on the grass, and I was crying. Because, you know, here I was, I tried to do all these things, and I just felt like I wasn't good enough. And I felt like no one liked me. Nobody liked me. And I remembered crying, and I remember people coming out and comforting me. So it was always... I love the effect produced by alcohol, but I was always very conscious that I had this low self-esteem and that I was just drunk with low self-esteem. I mean, for a moment I would forget, and I was a blackout drinker, so ultimately it would get to that. You know, and we were doing a lot of drugs back then. You know, I always hung out with the cool people. You know, I was in the accelerated classes, and, you know, and we were all doing like all crazy, I mean, I don't know, crazy drugs. You know, hallucinogenics, you know, back in the 70s. You know, Led Zeppelin, Black Sabbath. And then all of a sudden, like 1977, was I Feel Love, Donna Summer? You know, right? It changed my life. You know, she literally changed my life. I went from, you know, doing acid and taking drugs and drinking to, you know, and Fry Boots. Remember Fry Boots? And then I went to... Donna Summer, and it totally just, it changed my life. I was a disco guy, I love disco. I still love disco. I listened to the soundtrack from, you know, 54, the movie. I loved it. My first time I did cocaine was in the DJ booth at Studio 54. That was a first. No, that's not. I don't know if we applaud that, but it was really. it was you know, it was that experience that I chased. You know, I chased that. But before Studio 54, I was a Jersey girl, and to get across that bridge, Vava knows. Vava actually brought the crown home. I was Miss New Jersey for 4 years and did not win. And Vava brought it home to Jersey. So cheers for Vava. I went to you and I lost me. you want to participate? Where was I? The Jersey girl. Getting across the bridge. I'm sure this is probably the first time it was ever done on a thing where the audience participates. But the big deal was to get across the bridge. And I ultimately I did. My mom, you know, there was this guy that was in my life. His name was Robert. I don't know to this day. My sister remembers him. I don't know who he was. He was, I remembered what he looked like. I mean, his hair was frosted, so I don't know. I don't know if that meant that he was gay. But I was young, and he had like a light jacket on, and he had the sleeves, you know, the elbow patches. And his hair was, I remembered he had really nice skin and really nice hair. But I don't know who he was, but he was always there. I was made fun of a lot when I was a kid. They used to make fun of my fish eyes and my nose and, you know, however that was. And I was just, you know, I was bullied. Try doing it now. But I was bullied back then, and he was always there. And I remembered my mom. I still have no idea who he is. My mother took me outside on the back porch, and she had. And this is one of the best moments that I had with my mom because there weren't too many. And it was she had me look up at the stars, and she said to look at the brightest star, which I did. And I still to this day look up at the stars. You know, She told me that he was in an accident that night. He died, and I was devastated. You know, I still look up to those. I still there's so many angels and so many messages and people that have been in my life, and I just want to emphasize how blessed I am. You know, again, I didn't know that I was gay. I was engaged to a girl. Her name was Lisa. My brother's gay. My brother's still married. Not able to get sober. Doesn't deal with his sexuality. I didn't know that I was gay until I knew. I started coming into the city. I was a hustler, and I took checks in the beginning. It took a while for it took a while for this girl to get educated on, you know, get paid cash, you know, in up front. And anyway, so there's a story to that. And it took me a while to figure it out, but then I eventually got cash. And I was a mess. I mean, it was oh my God. Anyway, I started sneaking into the city. Lisa would like drop me off, and then she would come around to make sure that my car was still there, and I would take a cab down to Penn Station to come into New York, to go into New York, I forgot where I was for a second, to go into New York and go into the city and do my thing. And, you know, I was going out, and I one night I went out to, I was uptown hustling, and then I went downtown to I love the Village, and I actually live in the Village now, so it's like it's all come full circle, you know, that I'm actually back right where I started. I've gone to meetings where I bottomed out. It's been really cool. And I still just can't. I still can't believe this experience. It was the 80s. I was at a club, and shirts off, you know, poppers, you know, dancing. And I look across the room, and it was the most beautiful man that I'd ever seen in my life. His name was Jerry, hot Puerto Rican guy from New Jersey. Magic. It was magic. Seriously, I met him. We danced. I went back to his apartment. He had a disco ball in his living room. ABBA was playing Lay All Your Love on Me. And I did. And, you know, that was a Saturday night. I was living with him by Tuesday. Okay? Right? That's how I came out. I called off my wedding. You know, I called her on Sunday. Her father was one of the silent Italian types and did not speak to me. You know, and no one knew, like, where's Johnny? Who's Jerry? You know, who is this guy Jerry? And all of my friends thought that I was trying to steal their girlfriends from them, and because I like to dance. That's really all it was about, was dancing. I couldn't dance with my friends. Eventually, I came to dance with some of my friends when they came out. And, you know, I was a go-go dancer. I mean, I know you can't probably picture it now, but or maybe you can, or maybe you want to see it. I'll do it. Cue the music. I mean, it was like I would dress as a cop and dress as like a Marine and like strip, and it was all cool to do all that kind of stuff back then and make money. And so anyway, there I was living with Jerry, and it was the most volatile but amazing relationship that I ever had. I fell in love for the first time. I learned so much about, I came from such bigotry and prejudice and hypocrisy, and my first lover was Puerto Rican, and my sister, you know, was dating a black man, you know, so we went through that together, and it was just so much, so we partied together, and he was just so beautiful, and AIDS hit, and, you know, we used to lay awake at night. When I think of him, he had probably 1,200 records, and it was just amazing records, and the disco ball was on, and we were partying, and he would sing to me. He would call me Pa, you know, and I'd be laying on the sofa, and he'd be singing to me. And I used to look at him and think, you are so beautiful. You are so beautiful. And one night we were laying in bed, and he said, I don't know what it's going to be like to grow old and be gay. And he had a fear of that. And then he went to sleep. And then it left me with that thought of, like, growing older and being gay and just coming out and, oh, my God, I'm stoned and I'm high and I'm drunk and I don't know what's growing old and being gay. And Jerry died, and I was 23 years old. My heart was broken. I showed up. We're separated for a while, and I kept calling, and the family was telling me he was traveling, and I knew that he wasn't traveling. I knew something was up, but I didn't know what it was. I didn't know, and, you know, the news was out, but I didn't know. And I finally found out, they finally told me that he was in the hospital. I went to the hospital, and I showed up, and he's like, what are you doing here? And I'm like, what do you mean, what am I doing here? I brought subs, we're going to eat, I made big sandwiches, and we ate, and it just was like that. I would put on the mask and the gloves and the, you know, and the night, the last time that we were together was Christmas, 1985, and he said to me, he's like, and it was almost like that, we had that moment, he's like, what are you doing here? I bought him this really beautiful Scottish wool sweater, and he put the sweater on, and I was like, I'm here because I love you. And he held my hand, and he's like, I know that you do. And his body was covered with sores. I couldn't sleep with him that night. And I was thinking about this a couple of days ago. I couldn't sleep with him that night, and I went out, and I wound up getting drunk. And that next morning, he went into a coma. And so I went to the hospital, and I don't know why I'm telling you this, but it seems like that's just where I'm at today. And, you know, we communicated with the hands, the grip. You know, do you hear me? And you know that I love you. And, you know, it really spun me out. You know, I when I met him, we both said that we were working on Wall Street. And and we were both lying, you know. So I moved in on Tuesday, and Wednesday morning we were supposed to get up to go to work, and neither of us had any place to go, you know. so that was kind of funny. And she lied to me. I lied back to her. Anyway, I found my way into New York. I eventually started working on Wall Street. Jerry started working on Wall Street, and then he passed. And I started moving up on Wall Street. It was the '80s, it was a very decadent time. The clubs, you know, late 70s, early 80s. I loved the clubs. I loved being out. But when I had lost something, a part of me left with Jerry. And I just, New York is a great place to drink anonymously. You know, and I just drank, and I drank, and I drank. And I, you know, I at the end of my drinking, it was, I was under so much pressure because I was a trader on Wall Street. And I had a lot of responsibility, and I was hitting it really hard. And I mean, at the end of my drinking, I was my liver was distended. I was drinking so much that I wasn't eating. I was actually bleeding internally. You know, my days were overlapping. I was having anxiety attacks on a daily basis. You know, when you're a trader on Wall Street, you can't leave your desk and go blow into a brown paper bag. But that's what I had to do because I was having anxiety attacks every 15 minutes. You know, I was out every single night. I would say, I'm going to go home. I'm not going to do this. Everything they talk about in chapter 3, I didn't know until I knew that that's the behavior. That's what we're doing. That's what I was doing. And I kept telling myself I'm not going to drink, but I would get drunk. And, you know, when the dealers start telling you, what's up with you? You know, when the guys that are drinking really hard are saying, we're worried about you. You know, my boss called me in and he said, this is really what got my attention. He said, you know, they're watching you. And it was like it was up. The gig was up, and I didn't know that I was going to get sober. I did not know that I was going to get sober. I didn't even know that I wanted to be sober. I know that I tried on a daily basis not to drink, but I didn't do it because I thought I was an alcoholic. I did it because I wanted to feel better. You know, I wanted to feel better because I had that allergy. You know, and I drank to get drunk. I got sick. I blacked out. And it was like the results were always the same. So my days... Daylight came way too quickly. The sound of the birds, you know, it was haunting because it meant that I had to get up and do it all again. And so at the end of this was 1989. I had an anxiety attack. I went down to let me just tell you my last job I was in. I was talking about this. I was down in before I got my last job on Wall Street, I went to Fort Lauderdale, and I was partying like 8 days straight. I was wired for sound. You know, I'm sober 25 years and I still grind my teeth. That's how much blow I did. You know, and seriously, I've had two surgeries on my nose, and not to get it fixed, but I remember one time we did a group conscience, and they're like, girl, just get it done. Look at us. This was up in L.A., you know, like just get it done over at the old drug and alcohol center. They took a group conscience. I eventually did it. The guy's like, for another $1,000, I can break your nose and give you a new one. And I stay with my nose. But, I mean, I tried to... Anyway, I've had a couple of surgeries to repair it, and I went down to the nurse's office, and she said to me, I want you to go speak with someone. That night I went home, and I got on my knees, and I prayed. I grew up Catholic, but, you know, it was the idea of God was judgmental and punishing, and I was a sinner because I was gay, and that's what I had heard, and I prayed to God and I said, please, please help me. And I went to sleep that night. I got up the next morning. I called when I got to work. I called the nurse and said, you know, I can't go. You know, I can't go see him. I had too much work to do. She said, John, you need to go. There was something that was really insistent in her voice. And I heard her. So I went to this guy. And I wish that I could remember his name because I called him for the first 10 years that I was sober. We sat down and he started asking me the questions. And he asked me how I was. Couldn't remember the last time anybody asked me how I was, and I started to cry, and I started to unload all of the stuff, you know, losing my partner and being drunk and all the abuse growing up and all that stuff and all the responsibility of work. And at the end of our session, he said to me, John, can you come back next week? And I said, you know, I don't know. Honestly, I don't know. I was at that point in my life and in my drinking that I didn't know what was going to happen. You know, it was like all bets were off. I had no idea where. I said, I don't know. I'm afraid. The anxiety of knowing that I have another week out there doing what I'm doing just scared the shit out of me. I went out that weekend. Mars had just opened. It was a club in New York, 3 levels, 4 levels. And it was, I went there. I stayed out. I met someone. You know, Monday morning came. I called in sick for work. And then Monday afternoon, I got a call from, you know, it was the EOP. at work, and they put me on a plane to a treatment center. Had no plan on getting sober, no idea that I was going to get sober, and I went into this treatment center in Missouri, and Lake of the Ozarks. It was absolutely beautiful, and there I learned that I was an alcoholic. They brought a meeting in. If you have an opportunity to bring a meeting somewhere, please do it, because you never know who you're going to reach. I was reached. You know, we read the book, The Jay Walker, on page 37. I had my moment, my innermost, you know, I conceded to my innermost self that I was alcoholic. I loved the adrenaline rush of the traffic. Eventually, I started getting hit by the car. You know, that's how I drank. The results are always the same. I would get drunk, I would get sick, and I would black out. That's how I drank. And, you know, I learned about alcoholism. And when I left that place, you know, I always thought it was about good and evil and about right and wrong. And this counselor said to me, she said, "You're not a bad person getting good. You're a sick person getting well." And I didn't know what that meant. I do know what it means now. And I've healed that. You know, when I got out of there, they encouraged me not to go back to New York. So I wound up, and there's so many guys. There's a couple guys that I've seen tonight from there. Costa Mesa, Laguna Beach. It's just what a whirlwind it's been to just go from New York to treatment to Laguna Beach. And I what an amazing place to get sober. It was majestic. I mean, coming from Newark, and then, you know, really, and then I was like, Laguna was just, it was beautiful. And I've been to the Riviera now, so I've come to see it as that it's just absolutely stunning. And the sobriety there, I mean, Dr. Paul was there, Chuck C was there, you know, at the meetings that we went to. And I just, that's where I started coming into who I am, you know, and it started my journey into Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, it's a day at a time. And I just, honestly, it really humbles me to just, that it's been what it is. But it's a day at a time. When I first got sober, I didn't relate to anybody with 25 years. I would be the guys that were counting days. They're big on counting days in New York. And how do you stay sober for 18 days? How do you stay sober today? You know, I didn't know how to do that. And I learned how to do that. And it's been such an incredible journey to kind of like to heal and to, you know, eventually I moved to Los Angeles. I moved to L.A. in 93. This place is so special to me. There are so many people in here that I absolutely love that have just gone through this with me and not maybe judged me, but, you know, maybe. Not now, you know, never? Okay. But have stuck with me through all of this. The journey, I mean, I was hungry. I was questioning, and I still question. I still question, you know, God has to be bigger. You know, has to go to a deeper level. I used to ask Don, what is God? He's like, honey, God is with you. God is in you. You know, and I was looking and I was searching for whatever that was. And God is very, very present in my life. God is very present here. You know, my life is about love. And, you know, Digby was saying some really sweet things to me before. And sometimes it, just to hear kindness, random acts of kindness move me. To come from all the noise that I came from, to have this, it's amazing. It's beautiful. You know, spiritually, it's limitless where we can go and where I've gone. You know, with this, and I just laying all of that stuff down, all that shame and all that guilt that I came in here with, and you know, it took me. You know, I've gone through the steps probably 12, 13 times since I've been sober, very thoroughly. You know, I started to lay some stuff down. I started to take responsibility for my part and all that stuff because it was a blame game for me, and I was a victim. I came in here with that victim kind of mindset, and it's been a journey out of that and like, okay, what's my responsibility? And ultimately, everything has become my responsibility. You know, I'm responsible for how I react to whatever it is that you do or don't do. You know what I mean? I'm responsible for my perception of things, and I didn't know that. I didn't know that I had... But L.A. is where it kind of happened for me. I moved up here. I went to the Monday night meeting when it was one meeting before it broke. You know, it was like everyone was there, and it was just a great place for us all. You know, every Monday night I knew everyone was there, and I started to kind of become a part of the community. I made the coffee there for a year. You know, these guys had just started the year before. They had started. It was called Battle for the Tierra. back then, which now has become Best in Drag. I had moved up here, and you know, I had done Mein Herr from Cabaret as Liza. I had done her, and I fell off the chair because I never practiced with the chair in Laguna. The chair came that day, and I was up on the chair, like, you know, doing that thing, and then the chair, I slipped, and of course everyone clapped, and I won this contest in Laguna. And then the next year I did I'd Rather Be Blue, Barbra Streisand on the roller skates, but the roller skates came at the last minute, and then I wound up tripping on the roller skates. So I had done some half-assed drag in Laguna, but I thought, you know, I could do that, because I was like, I had hair then, and wire rim glasses, and I thought, so I became Miss New Jersey in the beauty pageant, and I, my name was Lasagna Buttafuoco, and I, it was back in the, I mean, that dates me, right, Joey and Mary Jo and all that nonsense that was going on, the gun blowing her face off, and anyway, so, and again, Miss New Jersey didn't win until Bob brought it home, so, but what a lot of fun, you know, to just, I started, you know, my life is amazing now, but that was the best time. It was the best time because there's a lot of people that aren't with us anymore, you know. And it was it's all magical, but it was really magical because we just bounced off of each other, and it's like that in New York too, but it's not the same as it is here. Nobody celebrates sobriety like we do in Southern California. It's the truth. It's the most honestly. It's really. That's just my opinion. It's not in the book anywhere. You know, it's just my opinion. But it really is. It's a celebration, and it's exciting to be sober, you know, out here. And we the crowd and the energy and the spirit and newcomers, and we're really rooting each other on. And it's just and it's very quiet. It's very subdued. You count days in New York, and we don't celebrate anniversaries. They don't clap. There's none of that kind of stuff. And there are a couple of meetings based on New York formats. Based on LA formats from the guys that have moved from LA to New York, you know, and there's a bunch of us there, and it's really cool to, but this is home. Spiritually, this is home for me, and I just, am I good on time? Okay. In my perspective, is very clouded. It's very of myself and of ourselves. But I mean, I just don't have. I've gotten tastes of the power of God and of me and of myself and what I can do and what I bring. You know, Alcoholics Anonymous has given me. It has given me. Well, it's given me me. You know, it's giving me a sense of myself that I've never, ever had. The validation that I get from, honestly, just working with one person, you know, the one-on-one. You know, we were talking about God. My God is like a goosebump God. You know, I get goosebumps whenever I'm connected, whenever I'm present. You know, I know that God is present with us. And I just, there's so many people that are here, that I've worked with, that have helped me. You know, to be sober and to stay sober. My sponsor reminds me that I have a really charmed life, and I really do. You know, I challenge myself, you know, so, I mean, I there's a whole bunch of stuff. You know, when I was about 10 years sober, you know, there's been a series of surrenders in the program, and it's not, you don't have to drink to start again in AA, you know, and so I've been able to, you know, when I first went through the steps with Robert Kay here, and it was magical. You know, when we got to step three, I had 5 years sober, and I we were on our knees, and Robert said a prayer for me, and then I wrote my prayer, and then we did the third step prayer. And I started crying like I did that day in the session with the psychiatrist. It was like I was ready to go to another level. I was ready to lay that stuff down. Please, just take it away. I don't want to control my life. I don't want to live. I don't want my fear, and I didn't want it to dictate my life, you know. And I just, God, please help me. And it was amazing. Don and I worked the steps, and it was, I will never ever forget this day. It was like we had just finished reading step 12. The room was illuminated. I mean, I couldn't script this at all. It was just like the light was filtering through the blinds. And we were together, and it's like, you will always be special, you know, always. He's like, do you feel the power in this room? And I was like, yeah, you know, yes, I did. I had been 2 years abstinent from sugar. That was then. And not today. anyway, so I left on, and I called my sponsor, you know, and my other sponsor, and I said, you know, I just had the most amazing experience, and I went to IHOP and totally screwed the whole thing up. I didn't know how to celebrate. I was actually, at one point, I was drinking pancake syrup out of the bottle because I couldn't wait for the pancakes to be done. Girl can't have pancake syrup, peanut butter, cheese, can't have it in the house. Cannot have it in the house. Anyway, and it's just been that kind of a thing, you know, where I just ask, and it is revealed to me, and I just I'm so full, you know. I'm so blessed to be sober, to be alive. We've come through a lot of stuff together, and there's still a way for us to go. But I have more hope now than I ever have to see friends get married and to see sponsees get married and have kids and have rights. And, you know, it's just, it's, there's stories to be told. I mean, there's been a process before this, and it's important to know. And I feel really proud to have been a member of that process and to be a part of that process and to be a part of this process and the movement that goes forward. You know, this is the most powerful thing that I've ever experienced in my life. The love, the spirit, you know, the energy, the way that we just were there for each other, and it's just, it's the most magnificent thing that I've ever experienced, and I continue to celebrate, and I'm so honored and blessed to be here, you know, with you. And I love God, I love Alcoholics Anonymous, I love you, and most importantly, I really love me, you know. And I not just me, but we get to make a difference. And I really absolutely believe that today. So I wish you a long, slow, amazing, majestic, magical recovery. Thank you.
This recording. To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.